when I stand up and give a talk, I don't want people to see that talk and think, you know, wow, that was cool, but I could not approach that. What I want people to take away is like, that was cool. I'm going to go try that in my code base.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 217, recorded on December 16th, 2024. My name is Connor, and today with my co-host Ben, we chat about different styles of talks, we diagnose a bug, and more.
A question that occurred to me earlier, is there a way, you mentioned that a lot of times in your videos you show building up a function and then converting it to tacit form. I assume there's an automatic way to convert it to tacit form, that's because that exists in other functional languages, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, I don't know if it exists for BQN. I definitely know that there not only does it exist for J, but there is it actually built in what they call a foreign function in J that goes from explicit to tacit. I know Haskell has pointfree.io that goes from explicit to tacit as well. I would imagine there's a BQN one out there. I don't actually know, because by the time I started learning BQN, I was already enough of like a tacit expert to like, I don't need ever to go to those tools. In fact, like,
right.
That's one of my biggest worries. And is that, you know, the evolution of whatever my algorithmic combinatory path is, that like, I love the combinator stuff so much, is that like, I've become that teacher that has lost all sense of like how complicated a thing is, because they swim in the topic, and it's been so long since they struggled with forks and the basic stuff that like I'm harming the reputation of array languages by showing this cool trickery stuff that is not practical. And I've heard folks that say, you know, we actually need to focus more on the practical array languages, like use of array languages, not the highfalutin combinatory stuff.
Well, you can still show the shining beacon on the hill, right? You can still show that, you know, and this hits me with, you know, something I think about when I give talks, is that when I stand up and give a talk, I don't want people to see that talk and think, you know, wow, that was cool, but I could not approach that.
Yeah.
What I want people to take away is like, that was cool. I'm going to go try that in my code base.
Yes. You want there to be takeaways for folks. And which is why some of your talks are just, you know, they're in my all top. I mean, I always mention the...
I have sometimes, like, I don't always hit that mark. Sometimes I give talks and they are kind of out there. Sometimes that's a good thing. It depends on the crowd, right? Like when Jason and I did Context for All the Things at C++ Now, that was a great example of a talk which was like, here's exploring what's possible. Like no one in their right mind would write what we did that way or use it in production. But for that crowd, it was like lighting a fire under the standardizing Constexpr.
Yeah. And I was going to say before, like, I always mention the easy to use, hard to misuse. But then right when you said, oh, some of my talks are out there, it's is it funny that I mentioned that talk all the time? It's the talk that hit the hardest for me where I was on my learning path, which is why I think it's okay to give talks at different levels, because depending on where everyone is on their learning journey, like they're going to watch that talk and be like, this isn't really anything new under the sun. And it's like, well, okay, it's because you learned that stuff already. But like for where I was, it was like mind exploding. Yeah, I probably at some point, not anytime soon, we'll have to rein it in on on the talks that I give these days.
Even the folks that know the material, sometimes what people say a lot to me these days is like, thanks for getting up there and saying that, because I've been arguing this to my boss, to my colleagues, whatever, and now I can have
point
some
at something. Yeah. Now I'm in research, so I don't really have to. I write my own code, and not many folks look at it. They look at what it does.
Right.
So I haven't had to have many of those arguments, but definitely I've been on teams before where I'll reference, oh, Kotlin something or Haskell something, and they'll be like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I'm saying I'm not making this stuff up. Like, other languages, this is like a pattern. Right. And then it's like, Ben gives a talk and it's like, okay, now there's someone in the C++ world other than me that's saying the same stuff.
Right, right. And it's funny because people in the functional world who some of the stuff I presented in C++, they've been doing it for years. And they look at the talk and they're like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
That's nothing special. Oh, finally C++ is getting this big whoop, you know?
Yeah, there's some memes online of whatever, Lambda comes to insert language, and then everyone's going, rah! And it's like, you know, half a century ago, Lisp, you know, already had it. But hey, it's better late than never, folks.
Better late than never. Talking of, let's wrap up. I mentioned to you earlier that you had a bug in one of your solutions to Advent of Code.
Talking about going full circle.
I believe day 7. Now, when you solved day 7, actually, you showed building up part 1, but then the code you showed for, you had a reworking for part 2, and then you solved both part 1 and part 2 with the reworking.
Mm-hmm.
Which happened to be correct. But I think in your part 1 work, you had a bug. And the bug was in the evaluation. So day 7 was the thing that put the plus and the multiply combinations in between the expression, right? I was watching that video, and there was a point where you went from showing the strings to evaluate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you changed to showing the evaluation. There's a point in the video where it flips over. And that had me scratching my head because I'm like, that string does not evaluate to that number. I think there was a bug, therefore. Like, I think BQN is doing, does it do right to left evaluation?
Oh, yes.
I think that's the bug. Because you have to do left to right evaluation in that problem without operator precedence. It's very strict. And that is not the same. You get different answers doing right to left.
Interesting. Well, I'll quickly, just so that we can both get the reveal, share my screen for a couple more seconds. Mm-hmm. So I can just do this.
Right.
So that,
okay.
I have both solutions still in my code. Value is the one that builds up a string, and value 2 is the one that has a list of actual operations.
Mm-hmm.
And value 2, if I'm looking at this, what is it doing with... Okay, this is a block. So we need to get rid of our list of operations that value 2 takes as a left argument. And so now we're just calling value on our list of numbers. And I'm curious to see what happens. If we go to BQN code AOC, and let me hide this so I can see what I'm typing. And we go BQN test. Oh, except it's taking time because I've got part B uncommented. This shouldn't take this long to run. Or maybe it actually does take. So actually, let's get rid of this.
Okay.
So this supposedly, at least for the mini input...
It might pass by accident because for the mini input, the ones that work might just be simple additions or something else. There's only 2 that work in the sample, first and last, and I'm not sure... There might be ways to evaluate those, which are most of the, so the first one is trivial, like it's 10 times 19 is 190. There's only 2 terms.
So days, I actually do recall it saying that it's, it comments on the evaluation left to right and
not according to precedence.
So the question is, I think this is where the bug is not. So I have, with the single glyph, reversed my numbers and made the tail backwards.
There was still a part in your video where you go from, and the video shows, this is going to be annoying.
Here, I can bring it up and scroll it on mine. we're doing a deep dive. So, I mean,
there's a point in your video where you show, here's the strings to be evaluated. And the next beat is you showing the evaluations of them. I think it's maybe another minute or so.
Oh, yeah. So I am live coding it. And technically, I think you're correct then. So in my video, there might be a bug because I'm actually skipping the parsing code and I've just copy and pasted a single example. And then definitely what you, so that is, you were paying super close attention. I'm surprised. Well, I'm not surprised no one else caught that because
you
that's,
didn't get a comment there.
That's such a narrow thing to catch. But yes, on the video version, I'm just doing it in BQM pad, which is just a web editor. And I just assign to a single local variable called line input and skip all the parsing. And therefore, the solution that I've coded up misses the fact that you've actually need to reverse the tail portion of your line. And Ben clearly was paying attention to that and noticed that.
Yeah. So just after this bit, yeah, you form the matrices and then you rotate, transpose, unravel them. And then, yeah. So here we've got the expressions list. Now, if we look at, for example, the third one, 6 + 8 × 6 + 15, evaluated strictly left to right, it's going to be 6 + 8 = 14 × 6 = 84 + 15 = 99. Is that right?
Or 84. Yeah.
6 × 14 are 84, right? Yeah, 7 × 12. +15 = 99. So the third number should be 99 when evaluated. But in fact, it comes out to 174. And 174 is 15 + 6 = 21 × 8 = 168 + 6 = 174.
Yeah, and what's funny, even while you were working through that math, I was evaluating it, right? And I was like, what is he doing 6 plus 8 for? And I lost you for a sec because I was like, it's 21. And I was like, oh, right. The point being is that I'm evaluating a BQN expression, not a math expression. Well, it's not even math. It's left to right. It's technically small talk because if we're using PEDMAS, you do the 8 times 6 first.
Yeah, yeah. But it's so, left to right versus right to left, yeah.
So you are correct. There is a bug not in my...
There's a bug in the video.
Yeah.
Clearly, and you then... got the right answer because you must have got the right answer to part one or you wouldn't have been doing part two.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it skips to VS Code like 30 seconds later where the parsing happens and silently there is a both a rotate and a reverse glyph because they are the same thing, but in this case, it's the reverse glyph. Have you, and so how many, so you said you've solved a couple problems.
I've solved like 1, 2, 3, 7, and 11. That's all I've done this year.
Okay.
I'm kind of resting on my laurels. The first, I've solved one complete year back when it was, and I'm even on the leaderboard at like 98, I think, finally. In 2015, when almost no one was doing it and it was brand new, I did all the puzzles that year. Because I happen to have free time. Although at about day 15, so in the early, my leaderboard stacking, not that I really go in for competitive coding or fast coding, but I was using the technique of, you know, do the puzzle by whichever is the best way to do it. I think one of them was literally just, it was like find the matching paren. And it was like, okay, well, I'll just open up this file, do forward S expression, do and find where the point is. That's the answer. So it was like, do that in your editor. But yeah, I think after on one of the teen days, 14, 15, 16, I went from California to England. And so suddenly I was going from puzzles at 9 o'clock in the evening to puzzles at 5 a.m. Which was the reason why my leaderboard really tailed off after that.
Yeah, it's a bit rough. I'm jealous of the folks on the Pacific Coast. It's a much nicer time. Maybe not in the first couple days. I think I'd solved them in less than 10 minutes. And actually, the servers were down on the opening night. I couldn't get access to the problem for, I think, 3 minutes. I can't remember what the error that I got was, but the last couple nights have been totally fine. But yeah, I think I solved it at the 10-minute mark, but it had been like 3 or 4 minutes before I got to the problem. But yeah, at 9 p.m., once the problems take like an hour-ish to do, doing that until 1 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, if you're doing that in the small hours, that's tough. At some point, probably you're like, you know, I just need to go to bed because it's not working out. If I like... continuing is not actually getting me any closer to solving it.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I've never actually done a full year. I'm not sure if I'll do all 25, but I'm at 28 stars, 14 days so far. And I'm almost all of these are just like grid based path searching. There hasn't been a ton of like algorithmic, which to be honest, I'm not complaining because BQN, it's brilliant. Like as soon as you have XY coordinates, you can do like point addition by just you add, you know, oh, I need to do 100 moves. And it's like, well, I can just literally generate an iota sequence and then add my points to that. And so it works fine. But I thought in years past, it gets more tricky. But maybe it's now that I just have parsing functions. And as soon as you can parse things.
Yeah. But once you have the function to parse the input.
Yeah. It gets rid of, honestly, like 40% of the work sometimes.
Yeah, I think last year, one of my colleagues, I think it was Michael, who said, like, he was doing it, and then around about day 10, he got sidetracked by building like a parser combinator library to deal with AOC.
Completely reasonable. Anyways, we will leave links for everything we mentioned in the show notes. I would encourage folks, even if you only solve a single day, it doesn't need to be BQN, choose a language that's on Ben's list. He had a tweet about it and a blog post about it in a different paradigm. You know,
whether that tweet is now deleted.
Oh, I mean, we said last comment or last topic or last thing a couple different times. You mentioned Blue Sky. Are you on Blue Sky now?
In as much as I'm on any social network, I am on Blue Sky. I have zero posts, but I exist.
I see. Because now, this is like 3 months after I joined Mastodon. It's like, and this is why I held off for so long, is because there's continues to be this proliferation. And I don't need more. I just need one. I don't want any. And all right, but you're on Blue Sky. And are you off of Twitter now? Because you said it might be deleted, or is it everything's gone?
My Twitter account exists, so no one can impersonate me, but there's nothing there. And to be fair, I hadn't tweeted anything since 2020. You know, the pandemic was a good time to quit social media.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Well, so some of your tweets live on in my talks because I've screenshotted them. But the ones that I've retweeted, that means they're gone now.
But your favorite one, the one about, I mean, it still exists in idea land, right?
Yeah. Well, you still have the blog post.
The idea is learn. Yeah, it's not the blog post, although the blog, you know, I blog recently, actually. I blog about once or twice a year these days. Yeah, and the idea is learn languages that will increase the paradigms, increase your toolkit. So, you know, C++ and Java and Rust and Python, they're all at some level the same language, as distinct from APL, BQN. That's an entirely different family, you know. Haskell, Lisp, different family, Smalltalk, Prolog,
yeah. There's a bunch of different ones, and you'll know when you stumble into a new one, because...
Yeah, because everything will be really difficult, and you'll be wondering how to do things, and how on earth do these people get anything done in this language? It's not all like how I expect.
But also, it can be freeing, you know? Whenever I'm in a language where I feel like I'm an expert in, I'm always, you know, I can never just do something, you know, the wrong way just to get things done because some people are watching. But then you come to a new paradigm. It's like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. People can't judge me. You know, right at the top of my t-shirt says, I don't know what I'm doing here. So anything goes. And
absolutely. And with Advent code, like we said, any route to a solution counts. There's no cheating. There's no gatekeeping here. If you can solve it in whatever language, great. If you can't solve it, look up a solution and learn from it.
Yeah.
Still works.
They only ask for the answer, not for the code. Alrighty. Well, I guess we'll say happy holidays to both you and the listeners. At this point, I'm not sure at what point the happy holidays portion will actually come out. So maybe I'll have to cut this into a sooner episode.
We've recorded at least three, if not four episodes here, and we'll be saying happy holidays in second week of January.
This was supposed to be an hour, and it's gone almost twice as long as that because
I budgeted more than an hour, I have to say. Because, you know, we get together, we only talk to each other once a month or so, and we always have interesting things to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're going to ask questions that are algorithmic plus APL plus BQN central, then yeah, we're going to lose track of time. You add Haskell in there, C++. Anyways, I might try to insert this little happy holidays.
Yeah. Happy holidays.
And if not, then maybe it's Happy New Year to the listener as well.
Be sure to check the show notes either in your podcast app or at adspthepodcast.com for links to anything we mentioned in today's episode, as well as a link to a GitHub discussion where you can leave thoughts, comments, and questions. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
I am the anti-brace.